Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Buddham dhammam sangham namassami. So we have the evening new moon meditation tonight, so I encourage you to try to practice through to 12 o'clock. So that's our tradition, that on the lunar quarters we try to put in a longer evening of practice. In Thailand they'll practice till dawn. Here it's very easy. We just practice through to 12 o'clock. And monastic life is one where we're really asked to challenge our comforts, to go out of our comfort zones, to not just take the easiest way out. So we're quite often we're going against the stream, against the grain. Like celibacy itself is going against the grain of the pull of sexual desire. Living in a community of hierarchy, being independence with a teacher, even though one might be 50 or 40 years old, that's going against the grain of independence and things like that. So monastic life has this challenge of surrendering our personal desires into a form, into a structure which educates us about suffering. And where suffering lies, that's where wisdom lies. That's a chance to be free. And so one of the things that we do in this tradition is we try to do this longer sitting in the evenings, and that's sleep and laying down is a very pleasant thing to do when you're tired. It's one of the difficult renunciations actually to give up. And going against that and sitting up for a longer period of time is a challenge that this tradition has always tried to uphold. Of course, if people are sick and so on, it's not. You'll still get fed tomorrow if you don't come. But do look at that. Try to do these all night. Oh, not all night, just sit till 12 o'clock, see if you can do it. So what do you do on an all night or a night of sitting? This is the Padeka Ratha Sutta, which they chant at Wapapong. So I'll just read that out from the Majjhima number 131. Thus have I heard, on one occasion the Blessed One was living at Savatthi in Jetis Grove, Anathapindika's park. There he addressed the bhikkhus thus, "Bhikkhus, venerable sir," they replied. The Blessed One said this, "Bhikkhus, I shall teach you the summary and exposition of, quote, one who has had a single excellent night. Listen, attend closely what I shall say." "Yes, venerable sir," the bhikkhus replied. The Blessed One said this, "Let not a person revive the past or on the future build his hopes. For the past has been left behind and the future has not been reached. Instead, with insight let him see each presently arisen state. Let him know that and be sure of it, invincibly, unshakably. Today the effort must be made. Tomorrow death may come, who knows? No bargain with mortality can keep him and his hordes away. But one who dwells thus ardently, relentlessly, by day, by night, it is he, the peaceful sage has said, who has had a single excellent night." Again, "Let not a person revive the past, or on the future build his hopes, for the past has been left behind, and the future has not been reached." So on this excellent night, we try to be in the present moment. "Instead, with insight, let him see each presently arisen state. So with insight, each presently arisen state, to see it as anicca dukkha anatta, constantly. That is the method. Let him know that and be sure of it, invincibly, unshakably. When you know that in conditioned phenomena, that it's anicca dukkha anatta, you're invincible. As soon as you take it as a personal quality, you're done. You've been defeated, as it were. All right, so instead, with insight, let him see each presently arisen state. Let him know that and be sure of it, invincibly, unshakably. Today the effort must be made. Tomorrow death may come. Who knows? No bargain with mortality can keep him and his hordes away. But one who dwells thus ardently, relentlessly, by day, by night, it is he, the peaceful sage has said, who has had a single excellent night. So that's what we do tonight. That's our practice. How, bhikkhus, does one, and this is the explanation of it, how, bhikkhus, does one revive the past? Thinking, I had such material form in the past, one finds delight in that. Thinking, I had such a feeling in the past, I had such perception in the past, I had such formations in the past, I had such consciousness in the past, one finds delight in that. That is how one revives the past. So thinking about old girlfriends or whatever. And how, bhikkhus, does one not revive the past? Thinking, I had such material form in the past, one does not find delight in that. Thinking, I had such feeling in the past, I had such perception in the past, I had such formations in the past, I had such consciousness in the past, one does not find delight in that. That is how one does not revive the past. You might add also, so that's the delightful part, there's also the negative part. So the aversion, the resentment, the regret, the remorse, all that creates a present sense of self from the past, that also one has to let go of. And how, bhikkhus, does one build up hope upon the future? Thinking, I may have such material form in the future, one finds delight in that. Thinking, I may have such feeling in the future, I may have such perception in the future, I may have such formations in the future, I may have such consciousness in the future, one finds delight in that. That is how one builds up hope in the future. So plans and projects and ideas and proliferation on insights and so on. So this is the positive. It could also be negative, anxiety, worry, concern, paranoia, hypochondria, da-da-da-da. It goes on and on. And how, bhikkhus, does one not build up hope upon the future? Thinking, I may have such material form in the future, one does not find delight in that. Thinking, I may have such feeling in the future, I may have such perception in the future, I may have such formations in the future, I may have such consciousness in the future, one does not find delight in that. That is how one does not build up hope upon the future. So all the fantasies that our minds go into, all the expectations, negative or positive, one does not find delight in that or get born in that or get drawn into that. And how, bhikkhus, is one vanquished in regard to pleasantly arisen states? So that goes back to the statement. Instead, with insight, let him see each presently arisen state. Let him know that and be sure of it, invincibly, unshakably. So the exposition on that. And how, bhikkhus, is one vanquished in regard to presently arisen states? Here, bhikkhus, an untaught ordinary person who has no regard for noble ones, is unskilled and undisciplined in their Dhamma, who has no regard for true men and is unskilled and undisciplined in their Dhamma, regards material form as self, or self as possessed of material form, or material form as in self, or self as in material form. He regards feeling as self, he regards perception as self, formations as self, consciousness as self, or self as possessed of consciousness, or consciousness as in self, or self as in consciousness. That is how one is vanquished in regard to presently arisen states. So we were chanting the Anatta Lakkhana Sutta, and what that's saying is like the method, the constant method is you see anicca dukkha anatta on everything, and you constantly bring that perception up. Whatever it is, you just bang away at that. That's the method of Satipatthana, and you see it throughout the texts. So any self-analysis, any self-disparagement, all that stuff is not the method. It's just not where it's at. Right? Even thinking that you're thinking is not the method. Even thinking that you're thinking too much is not the method, because it's not you thinking. It's not self. I mean, it's a very radical thing. Even thinking that you should be thinking something else is still seeing it as self having a problem. That's not it. It's anicca dukkha anatta. So you have to somehow just begin to not believe in any of it. This is anicca dukkha anatta. That's the method. And you have to hammer away on that until that begins to be a way of functioning that is automatic. It's hard to do, isn't it? Because the sense of self is so believable. So that's how one is vanquished. And how, bhikkhus, is one invincible in regard to presently arisen states? Here, bhikkhus, a well-taught noble disciple who has regard for noble ones and is skilled and disciplined in their Dhamma, who has regard for true men and is skilled and disciplined in their Dhamma, does not regard material form as self, or self as possessed of material form, or material form as in self, or self as in material form. He does not regard feeling as self, perception as self, formations as self, consciousness as self, or self as possessed of consciousness, or consciousness as in self, or self as in consciousness. That is how one is invincible in regard to presently arisen states. And so, let not a person revive the past or on the future build his hopes, for the past has been left behind and the future has not been reached. Instead, with insight, let him see each presently arisen state. Let him know that and be sure of it, invincibly, unshakably. Today the effort must be made. Tomorrow death may come. Who knows? No bargain with mortality can keep Mara and his hordes away. But one who dwells thus ardently, relentlessly, by day, by night, it is he, the peaceful sage has said, who has had a single excellent night. So it is with reference to this that it was said, bhikkhus, I shall teach you the summary in exposition of one who has had a single excellent night. This is what the Blessed One said. The bhikkhus were satisfied and delighted in the Blessed One's words. And so this theme is constantly throughout the text. First of all, the five khandhas, a way of talking about our experience as human beings. And so whatever way you want to break that down, just the experience of being human, bodily things, vedana, the attraction and repulsion to things, perceptions, I'm great, I'm not great, I'm getting somewhere in my practice, I'm not getting anywhere in practice, I'm diligent, I'm not diligent, I'm old, I'm young, I'm enlightened, I'm not enlightened, whatever self-perception you have is just a perception, it's just sanya. It's not, there's no essence in it. Mental proliferations, mental concepts, mental constructions, formations, sankhara are not self. And consciousness, all the different modes of consciousness that we have, sight, sound, and so on. And so the method is to, usually the progression is from anicca to dukkha to anatta, where you apply anicca sanya, perception of impermanence, to everything, every state. And so it's necessary to be present. So if the mind, if attention is preoccupied with fantasies, with regrets, with remorse, with hopeful expectations, with just daydreaming, then of course there's no present moment awareness and there's no practice. You cannot introduce anicca sanya if the mind is just proliferating all the time. So some form of samadhi practice is necessary, obviously. So that's the task. Where, and I was saying this the other night, in your own practice, where does your attention get caught up? You know, where do you get preoccupied? We all get preoccupied in different ways. It might be obsessing about something, or it might be just fantasizing, it might be sexual desire, it might be regretting, it might be projects that we're thinking about, or whatever it is. What prevents one from being in the present moment in a kind of sustained, in some kind of a sustained way, right? So rather than getting too caught up with levels of absorption, and I have this level and that, because that's still self-view. You know, I have this jhana and I'm working on that jhana, and I'm getting, if I just work a bit more, I'll get to that. It's still self-view. It's still sakkaya ditti, you know. So kind of maybe more simple way, first of all, is to look at those hindrances. And the hindrances, basically, they have their classic formulation, which I was talking about on, whenever I was talking about it, on Saturday. What, you know, in terms of hindrances, what is it that prevents you from being here right now? Like, what's your mind doing now? Is it present? Do you know what you're feeling bodily? Is it pleasant, unpleasant? Do you know what perceptions are there? Do you know what mental concepts are running through the mind? And do you know where you are now? So Satipatthana is saying, you know, is asking us to do that, to just know this present moment, just the way it is. And then to introduce the perception of impermanence. Anicca sanya. So you have to be present to know that. So like throughout, like this night, any night, throughout a Dhamma talk, throughout, if you're doing chanting, cooking in the kitchen, are you in the present moment? And if not, what is it? What is it? How does your mind get caught up into past and future? And if you see that, it's usually just a few patterns. You know, one could be regret, one could be fantasizing. It's not that many patterns. The sort of scenarios that like aversion takes on, maybe millions of scenarios, but it's still aversion. So I can be, maybe I'm in a kind of critical mood and I'm just thinking, why isn't it like this? It shouldn't be like this. It should be different. And but it's still aversion. So I might be complaining about all kinds of things. It's still aversion. See, you just begin to see the basic patterns of preoccupation, unskillful preoccupation, and how they are caught up with a sense of self and I. And you begin just to diagnose that and note that and identify that. That's just thought. That's just perception. That's all it is. And then what you begin to see is you begin to see the cessation of self. You see like the end of a thought. That's how, I think that's how Anicca Sanya really begins to pick up in the practice. It's like, you know, you're meditating and maybe you really have good samadhi, maybe you don't, but you get caught up with some responsibility you have tomorrow, or you regret about something that happened yesterday, and then something happens and that sense of then the thought ends, and with the ending of the thought you also have the end of a sense of self, and that's really where you start. Usually you don't see the arising of things. You tend to notice the cessation first. You notice the end of a thought, and right there is where you establish Anicca Sanya. Right there, it's ending, not self. But most people, they just then start to think why they're thinking too much. They just go into more thought, more analysis, more judgment. But right there, that's Anicca Dukkha Anatta, that point where thought has ended. And to note that and not try to become anything, you know, not try to get anywhere, not try to get rid of thought, not try to, because that trying to get somewhere is still tanha and sakkaya ditti, trying to become someone who doesn't have thinking, is still me trying to become someone who doesn't have thinking. But the noticing of the end of thought and the silence there and the space there, that's Anicca Sanya, that's Anatta Sanya. And then from that, one's intention is to really as I was saying on Saturday, if I ask you, if we're looking in the summertime at the field outside, and ask, you know, we look at the trees and the grass and so on, and ask you, notice the different colors of green. You might not even have noticed that. You say, oh, it's green. And I say, but notice the different shades of green. And you say, oh yeah, there's a brighter one, there's a darker one, there's a more bluish one, no, there's a more yellow one. And then, so you're noticing something that's there all the time. And that's discernment, or contemplation or reflection. So the Buddha is asking us now, bring up anicca sanya. Bring up that kind of discernment, which is noticing change, rather than always being caught up in the khandhas and trying to change them out of desire. And that's what desire does. Desire is always trying to reconfigure khandhas so you're comfortable. So pleasure, comfort, getting what you want is very important for the patujana, for the worldly. And so resistance to something that you don't want, trying to manipulate things so you get what you do want. You know, we all, you know, the different ways we do that. Nothing wrong with wanting, but thinking that that is where the goal lies, of course, would be a very wrong view. So, so like an excellent night of practice, desire to lay down comes up. Desire to not do this comes up. And what we're trying to see, like that perception, I can't do this, is just a perception, I can't do this. I remember Ajahn Sumedho once, he said, in his first few years of in Thailand, he said, I can't take this anymore. I can't take one more minute of this. I need to wait a minute, and he was still there. It was just the perception, I can't take it anymore, I can't do this. And we limit ourselves very often by those kinds of perceptions. I'm not good at this, I can't do this. So developing things like endurance and determination to go against desires is a very important part of our training, of our monastic life. Not to hurt ourselves, but to kind of really just go out of our comfort zones. And certainly this giving up the pleasure of laying down for a period of time, it's a very strong one. A very strong one. But we have a lot of space in our lives. We have, you know, tomorrow's a pretty relatively spacious day and so on. So to notice desire as an object, to notice the sense of self that arises with desire as an object is very freeing. It really liberates you. But to be always the victim of our limitations, to be always believing in these self-perceptions and hence perceptions of others is the samsara. You know, it's the trap that we get caught into. So that as the self-perceptions come up, the more we can see them with anicca sanya, with perception of this is just changing, the more it actually inclines us to anatta. Because if you can sustain anicca sanya on the flow of consciousness, what you find is that and you have to be very diligent with this, but what you find is that the mind begins to tend towards emptiness of a sense of self. Why? Because the kind of self-identity is no longer being fed. And as you no longer feed that self-identity, then what the mind is begins to have this kind of silence, which is free from self-identity, free from I-making. So anicca sanya, when it's practiced diligently, brings the mind to perceive emptiness of the self-view, of the self-perception, of the I-making, mind-making. And that's a kind of natural occurrence. Rather than thinking maybe anatta is something you have to get, and that's what sometimes again, one has a kind of epiphany of insight, and there's some fantastic experience of non-duality or not self or whatever you want, but that is very helpful. People have that and it changes their lives. But also the way, the kind of more practiced way, say, the way of cultivation is to hold anicca sanya, to really make that just like the color green, the different colors of green, kind of sustain that in your practice. And if you sustain that, then the sense of self doesn't have any foothold and it begins to fall away, and then you just the mind's empty of self. And so what we mean by emptiness becomes more and more apparent. Not necessarily through any kind of whiz-bang experience, kind of some fantastic experience, but just through a natural result from applying nichasanya. When you find yourself thinking, don't get caught into the idea that you have to put an end to thinking, because you're not thinking. There's no thinker. Thinking arises because of habits, because of intentions, because of cultural things, because of reading, because of all kinds of things. It's a conditioned phenomenon. It's paticca-samuppanna. It's a dependently originated thing, thought. But it seems like I am the thinker. And hence it seems like I have to get rid of thinking. So it's kind of counterintuitive not to try to get rid of thinking. But what we notice is thought is an object. So sankhara anicca, sankhara dukkha, sankhara anatta. Mental formations are not self. They're not self. So where you notice that is when a thought ends. So you're meditating and your mind goes off and you're thinking about tomorrow, and then something happens. That scenario ends. It ends because its karma has ended. You know, its intention is somehow runs course for that moment. And you know, that's the end of thought. And that's the point of emptiness. And then that's where you introduce anicca-sanya. You can keep reminding yourself of that. So it's a very doable thing. It's not beyond our capabilities. If you make the project too high that you want to get non-returner next week, or you want to get some deep absorption, then you get caught up in all kinds of goal-oriented sense of self, which is still sakkāya-ditti. Still sakkāya-ditti. But if you keep it like the hindrances, you can reflect on hindrances, preoccupations, you can let go of those, because there's something that you can look at. Things that you don't know yet, attainments that you read about and argue about and have views and opinions about those things, you don't know. You're just kind of projecting about what you think you've got or whatever. But the hindrances, you see, you're caught up with greed or some kind of, you can see that sense of self, you can know that, and that's apparent, it can be known. And anicca-sanya can be known. Something can be known. It's not esoteric, it's not far away from you. So it's very doable that way. Very, very human kind of doing. All right, I'll leave that for tonight. Andamayam dhammakataya sadhu parangadamase sadhu.